For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, let's quickly review what we did last week and move forward. So we're holding in the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, as they are loosely translated, even though, as we have already seen and will continue to see, there is going to be far more than ten in here. So let's start again. Quick review. I'm going to remind you again, the way that I've broken down, I did not have a chance because I got in late last night to redo the sheets, and we'll have to deal with that in a second where the problem is, but wherever there's a major space on your English side, that's because there is a paragraph break in the actual text of the Chumash. So that, for example, in between verses 1 and 2, there is an actual paragraph break. It's on the same line, but there's a space of about 9 letters in which there's just a pause, so to speak, in the language of the Torah. Then we have verses 2 through 6 all as one section. That's what we covered last week. Just to quickly run through them again. I am the Lord your God, took you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall not have the gods of others in my presence. As I'm reading through this again, count up how many different mitzvahs you see, and how many of the 10 we should break this down into. Again, I'm the Lord your God, took you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall not have the gods of others in my presence. You shall not make for yourself a graven image or any likeness which is in the heavens above, which is in the earth below, or which is in the water beneath the earth. You shall neither prosper. How many we counted verbs you have, right? Not have the gods of others, not make for yourself a graven image, not prostrate yourself before them, nor worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a zealous God who visits the iniquity of the fathers upon the sons, upon the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, and I perform loving kindness to thousands of generations, to those who love me, to those who keep my commandments. Okay, that's all one big paragraph. It starts off with a statement. I am the Lord your God who took you out. And then we have a series of verses all on idolatry of various levels, as we have seen. How many mitzvahs do we have here? What'd you count? Three? What are the four?
Not have the gods of others, not make yourself a graven image, neither prostrate nor worship.
Good. So if you count prostrate and worship as separate, you would end up with four commandments, and that's not even counting verse 2,
right,
which we have to see what to do with. Is there a mitzvah or a commandment in verse 2, which is really a statement of, I am the Lord your God? Does that somehow embody the mitzvah to believe that I am the Lord your God, or is it just a statement of fact? But so there seem to be at least four within the elements of idolatry. If I were to ask you the question, as we did last week also, just in our quick review, who is the speaker in verses 2 through 6? Shem is the speaker. Everything is in that, what do you call that, third person? First person.
First.
Everything is in the first person. I. I perform loving kindness. I do this to those who keep my commandments. Those who hate me, I visit iniquity. I am a zealous God. Everything is in the first person in verses 2 through 6. And if I would ask another question, and this we did not, I don't believe, discuss, but let's use this now as our springboard into the continuation of the section. If I were to ask, are verses 2 through 6 and all that's encompassed within them, does it make sense that they should be in whatever the Ten Commandments are? We haven't yet really begun to address what is the Ten Commandments. Why? We've used this language in some of our other classes. There's like the elephant in the room, the big question, capital B. You could ask lots of questions in any text that you study, like nitty-gritty kind of questions. Why did we use this word? Why not that word? And those are important questions, but they're details. And then there are the big questions. For example, when we learned about the binding of Isaac, so there are lots of questions on the test, but the big question is, why would God ask Abraham to sacrifice his son? It's just one of those questions you have to be able to address to understand what you're doing. So we have to address the question as to, why are there 10 commandments? The Torah, are some mitzvahs more important than others? There's 613. Where were they all given? They were all given on Har Sinai. That's in just last week's parsha was source of that. Just like the mitzvah of Shemitah was given on Har Sinai, that's to teach us all the mitzvahs were given on Har Sinai, as Rashi goes through. We're not going to go through that now. So why is there 10? What's the significance of this 10? That's the big question, which I'm raising now, but we're not going to address now. But whatever purpose there is, somehow these are, I'm hesitant to use the word more significant, I'm hesitant because I don't know what to do with that. But there's something about these that when Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, this is what's taught first to the Jewish people. And it's on these tablets, comes down, there's something different. I'll use that word. Can we agree that? That I think is fair. There is something different about these mitzvahs more than anything else because, look, they're different. They were put on the stone and not everything else was. So we'll have to address what is different about them and why. If I were to ask about these first couple of verses, however many different, you know, how we'll divide them all up, are these statements of prime significance? Does it make sense to us? If we had to choose out of the 613, 10, would these be on our short list? If we, you know, if we have to cull, you know, I don't know, say like 30 out of the 613 to say these are our short list of the mitzvahs that should be on the top 10, would these be on them?
Probably not.
Probably not. Why do you say probably not?
They don't seem.
Okay, they don't strike you. Anyway.
I would say the mitzvahs, yes, but the descriptive portions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in other words, the concept of idolatry certainly would make sense to be on our short list if we had to choose 25 or 30 mitzvahs in the Torah that would be, you know, culled from there down to our final 10. Idolatry, I think, makes sense to be on there. It's fairly fundamental to everything that we do. So that concept makes sense. And as you said, this is probably what Dina was struggling with, there's a wordy description of the prohibition of idolatry, particularly verses 5 and 6. You know, if you just stopped at 3 and 4, it would be, you know, highlights. Don't have any of the gods in my presence. Don't make yourself a graven image or likeness. And then we get into prostration and worshiping. Also makes sense. And then that, I guess, that right in the back half of 5 and 6, because I'm a zealous God. I visit iniquity upon the fathers and the sons, the third and fourth generations, those who hate me. I perform loving kindness to thousands, those who love me, those who give my commands. If we're giving highlights here, we're giving the top 10, that seems to be a little bit wordy and certainly of note. So far, so good? All right, well, then we have another paragraph break, and then we move on to verse 7. Lo siso Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Lashav, meaningless, for no purpose. Ki lo yinakeh Hashem eis asher yiso es shemo Lashav. For the Lord will not hold blameless. In English, in Hebrew, that's literally, it's more said in a, will not cleanse. Meaning he will not cleanse you, will not hold you blameless for anyone who takes his name in vain. Comments, questions?
How do you determine what's in vain?
Excellent. Okay, so first point would be, what does it mean to say God's name in vain? What does that look like?
Right.
That's going to be, does it have to be actually, in other words, we're very careful with this today. You'll note the word Hashem. You know what the word Hashem really means?
The name.
The name. It's Ha-Shem. Shem in Hebrew means name. Like, Ma-Hashem Shalcha, what's your name? Ha-Shem, the name. We don't even want to use God's name, so we just say, we refer to Him as the name. The name, Hashem. Because we're very particular with this. If you remember, we had a very fascinating comment from Rashi, explained by the Maharal, when we were studying Yitzchak and his two boys, Yaakov and Esav, and how Esav was always trying to fool his father as to who he was. And when Yaakov comes in to steal the blessings, Rashi pointed out to us that Yitzchak thought something was weird because Yaakov kept using God's name. And he said, this is strange. That sounds like my son Yaakov who always uses God's name. My son Esav doesn't. And the Maharal asked, if that's true, why was he so fooled about who Esav was? Shouldn't he have realized Esav never uses God's name? Yaakov always does. Why would he think that Esav is so righteous? Do you remember the beautiful answer? He explained that there are two types of service of Hashem. One embodied by ahava, by love, and one embodied by yira, by fear. Love is the desire always to come close, and fear, because of one's awe, there's a distance that's created. Yitzchak was primarily functioning. Yitzchak is known as the three forefathers to function out of yira, out of strength, out of fear and awe. So he did not use God's name regularly because that's part of that trait, is you're always afraid, I'm not going to say it right, I'm not going to think about the right things, and therefore I refrain from doing things out of concern lest I not do it correctly. So when he saw that Esav also didn't use God's name, he didn't interpret it as because he's not religious, he interpreted it as it's just like me. This comes out of this particular verse of you may not use God's name in vain, and your comment is a good one, which we will do when we get to Rashi. What does it mean? What does it look like to use God's name in vain? Well, let's ask this question. What do we see from the fact that it's in here is on the scale of the value of using God's name in vain? In other words, like, how bad is it to eat non-kosher? How bad is it to wear shatnez? How bad is it to say God's name in vain? Where do we put the saying God's name in vain on the spectrum of bad things?
Is it better to say God or Hashem? Isn't saying God's name in vain?
Much less so. Hashem is better than that, but we're really referring to actually using His name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So how bad is it? Correct.
Yeah.
Right? So the fact that if it's mentioned here at all means it's pretty bad, and the language that's used in mentioning it is pretty bad. You shall not do so. And then we have this language of, which is, does not appear often in the Chumash, and if you do, God will not hold blameless, will not ever be able to cleanse you from he who takes his name in vain. Now, taking God's name in vain, which we're familiar with because it's in the Ten Commandments, so people know it, is an interesting prohibition. It's just an interesting prohibition. You have a prohibition of, idolatry, the previous paragraphs. So I understand that's pretty serious.
It's like saying, don't mess with me. Don't mess with me and my name. You can mess with my name, you're messing with me.
That's interesting, to put it on such a pedestal as we're doing here.
Because he's not a pedestal. Why shouldn't his name be? His name is him.
So, it is of note to the significance, the level of significance that you have to doing so, in terms of to how we view it. But I'm leaving just as a comment. Any other comments or questions on this particular verse?
Well, we pointed out last week that it looks like it's now in the second person, not the first person.
Excellent. Okay, so now we've switched. Somehow something has switched here in this verse, in verse 7, in that now it's third person. You, speaking to the Jewish people, shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold blameless anyone who takes his name in vain. No longer God speaking, this is now Moshe speaking on his behalf. Excellent, that's going to be a major, major point. We'll get to that, of course. Okay, so far so good? Now let's move forward. Now we move on. You see there's a paragraph break. This is a new paragraph as well. Remember, Zachor es Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho. Remember the Sabbath day to sanctify. We're going to read through all five verses about, four verses about Shabbos, and we'll go back and tackle them one at a time. When we flip the page, I'll just tell you right now, you'll see that the first box somehow was a repeat of the first box from the previous page, and we'll just ignore that. Remember the Sabbath day to sanctify it. 6 days, Sheshes Yomim Ta'avod Vasisa Kol Melachtecha. 6 days may you work and perform all of your labor. But on the seventh day, Shabbos LaHashem Elokecha, is a Sabbath to the Lord your God, or for the Lord your God. Lo Sas Achol Melacha, you may not perform any labor. Ata you, Uvincha, not your son. Bitecha, your daughter. Avdecha V'amoscha, your manservant or your maidservant. Uvehemtecha, your beast, your animals. V'gercha Asher B'sharecha, nor the strangers who is in your cities. Verse 11, for in 6 days Hashem made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, Al Kain, God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. Okay, we're familiar with this, but there are a lot of stuff that's lots to talk about. Okay, so here are four verses. On the next one of the Ten Commandments. Okay, this is number four. Number four on our list. And it goes well. Let's go one at a time. Zochros Yom HaShabbos, the question. Remember the Sabbath day to sanctify. Comments, questions?
How is remembering it sanctify it?
Yeah, I mean, the basic question is interpretation. What does it mean to remember the Sabbath day and sanctify it?
Do, don't forget. Do.
So... Okay, you're saying that remembering actually means to do.
Right. Remember when you say, oh, I have to go to the supermarket and get some milk, you know. So when you say remember, it's in terms to do it.
Okay, there's going to be a lot to talk about. There are many of the commentators, see Rashi and the Ramban are going to have what to say in terms of what does it mean to remember. But the word that the Torah uses is zachor, specifically to remember. Likadsho, to sanctify it. Remember to sanctify it. We'll talk much about what exactly that means. And now we have this lengthy description about Shabbos. Sheshes yomim ta'avod, 6 days you should work. Vasisa kol melachtach, and perform all of your labor. Comments, questions?
It seems like it's saying that to do all your work, you're only going to need 6 days.
Okay. 6 days you have. Now, this is certainly a verse against the concept of the American Sunday, that's for sure. 6 days, Tav, oh, you should work for 6 days, Vasisa, Kol Melachtach, and you'll perform all your labor. We'll see Rashi make a comment. You should view yourself when you go into Shabbos as everything is done. It's over, it's complete, I've done everything that I need to do.
Which is probably one of the reasons we don't talk business on Shabbos.
Correct. Right. There's, it's just finished.
Because that would continue whatever work you were doing, and it's supposed to be completed.
Well, so you're not supposed to plan.
Right.
Shabbos for the next day, because that's taking care of business.
Right.
Right.
That's right. That is right. I said over last week. Last week's parsha was the mitzvah shmita. So Rashi comments. That the reason why the Jewish people go into exile is because of the shmita. When the Jewish people don't keep Shemitah, they go into exile, because in this week's parsha we're going to read, the Torah is explicitly going to say when we read about the Teichach, about the admonition and all the curses that will befall the Jewish people, the Torah says you'll be exiled from the land, and then the land will finally rest from all of its Shemitahs that you did not observe while you were in the land, and because you did not observe them, it will spew you forth from it so that it can get its rest. That's a very interesting language, because if I were to ask the purpose of the mitzvah of Shemitah, so I think our gut reaction would be that the purpose of the mitzvah of Shemitah, is it for the land or is it for us, the Jewish people? Why is there a concept of Shemitah? So the gut reaction would be for us. Everything is for us. For us to learn emunah, faith, trust, whatever it may be. Is it because the land needs to lay fallow and like God was giving us the concept of what do they call it, crop rotation, and so it's, maybe it's a nice thing, but the mitzvah Shemitah is to teach us like all the other mitzvahs. And the Torah is saying not the way, the Torah is saying the land needs its rest. So the Ral asks a question, very strange thing, why should that be? And he explains, the Ral explains that the land of Eretz Yisrael is perfect in every way. It is perfect in its spiritual way, in its physical way. Everything it has to offer is perfection. The way you manifest perfection, completion, wholeness, is by stopping. When you continue to work, the essence of continuing to work says, I'm not done. There's still more to be done. And therefore, he explains, that's why Shabbos, oh, is of course, he says, is the end of the 6 days of creation. And technically speaking, it could have been that day one would have been light and dark, and day two would have been splitting the two waters of the sea, and three would have been creating, and day four would be Shabbos, the day of rest, and then day five would be the rest of it. But it can't be that way. Because it has to be Vayichulu Hashamayim V'Ha'aretz. It has to be that everything was completed, and when it's completed, then there's Vayichal Elokim Eskol Asher Asah. He completed, he finished, Vayonach, and he rested. The essence of the rest says everything until this point is now done. It's finished. So that Shabbos for us, that's why I just mentioned a second ago, Rashi says, you go into Shabbos as if all your work is done. Shabbos is not the idea of, I'm working so hard, I need a break. Why do I need this break? So that I'm ready to go again on Sunday. No, that's not what Shabbos is. Shabbos is not a break in the week so that you can rest up and get ready for the next. That's a Saturday. That's not Shabbos. Shabbos is, you are done, it's complete, it's whole, and now you enter into a spiritual realm of when you have everything that's completed. And that's why we stop everything. That's why you can't talk about preparing for the next day. And that's why you go into it as if you're finished. And that's why the land needs a Shabbos. Not because the land needs Shabbos in itself because it gets tired, but because the land is perfect. This land is everything it needs. And you, if you were to continuously work it, you'd be saying, it's not finished, it's not completed. We run around during the week, busy, 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 because there are things to do, I'm not done. Come Shabbos, I'm done. I have a different focus now. My weekly activities are actually done. I happen to know there's going to be a Sunday coming, but that's because we're not God, we're just being Mekadesh ourselves as to what God. And therefore you have it. So 6 days you work, and verse 10, but the seventh day is a Shabbos LaHashem Elokech, the Sabbath to the Lord your God, which we will have to talk about, of course. It's a very interesting phrase that it's a Shabbos to Hashem. And here we have the first prohibition. What does it mean? Verses 8 and verses 9 really only told us to remember Shabbos. I don't know exactly what that means yet, but that sounds like it's going to be something active that I'm doing to remember Shabbos. Verse 9 only told me what I'm supposed to do in the days leading up to Shabbos. And now, finally, in verse 10, I have this concept of the seventh day being a Shabbos to Hashem. And what does that mean to me? Lo sasta chol melacha. You cannot do any of your work anymore. Now, what does melacha mean? What does that mean, labor?
That's one of our questions.
That's going to be a huge question, which is discussed obviously at length. But what I'm just pointing out at this point is the interesting element of here we have it again. We're in the Seres HaDibros, we're in this sort of highlights, and we have a very significant prohibition of do not do any. Prohibition, and the Torah does not define for us here very well, if at all, what exactly it is that I can't do, other than the word malacha. 6 days a week, you do malacha. Seventh day, you may not perform malacha. Who can't do the malacha? And again, here you have an interesting way of describing it, because usually, whatever the Torah says, you can't do it, you can't do it. The Torah gives us a list. You can't do it. Your son can't do it, your daughter can't do it, your servants can't do it, your animals can't do it, nor can the stranger living in your midst. This is going to be a complete cessation from work, all the way down to your servants and your animals. What would have been if your servants or animals didn't have to rest? What would Shabbos look like? So I wouldn't do anything, but my servants and my animals would continue as normal. And the Torah here demands that the way that Shabbos is going to be, it's going to be inclusive, it's going to be not only you, your children, your servants, and your animals, as well as the stranger living in your cities. All may not perform melacha.
Shabbos goy.
Yeah, so he's not on this list.
Well, who's the stranger?
Good. So who is the stranger?
And what is the city? Is it the city in that field?
Gercha asher v'sharecha, the stranger living in your city. So the Torah uses the word ger in two ways, and we will have to see which way it's being used here. In one way, it's being used in the way that we use it today to mean a convert, somebody who was born non-Jewish and has become Jewish. That's one usage of the word ger. The Torah has another usage of the word ger, which is a non-Jew living in the land of Israel who's accepted upon himself that the reality of Torah is true. He's accepted upon himself the seven mitzvahs of Noach, and he lives as a non-Jew in our midst.
He's a Noahite.
Correct. And he's called a ger toshav.
Okay.
a ger who dwells amongst us. And we'll have to see, what does the Torah here mean when it says ger asher b'sharecha? Is he coming to include the convert? But the Torah is referring to a regular Jew just who's been converted. And the same way the Torah speaks out and takes the time to tell a son, daughter, servant, animal, it happens to mention the convert as well. Or are we referring to, of course the convert has to keep Shabbos, there's nothing to talk about there, but the Torah is adding here is that even the ger toshav, even the non-Jew who's never converted but has accepted the seven Noahide mitzvahs, if he lives in your cities, also would be obligated in Shabbos. Yeah?
The question and comment. The comment is that nowadays we're told that someone who's in the process of converting can't observe.
Correct. He's not allowed to keep Shabbos. That's absolutely correct.
My question or observation, it doesn't refer to your wife.
Very good.
And first I thought, well, maybe it's because this is directed to women also, but then I noticed over the very last statement, number 14, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. So it appears these are directed toward men. So does that mean that wives can do work, but nobody else can?
Excellent. So let's rephrase your question. Since we know that that's not true, why does the Torah leave her out? Because once you're giving this long speech about sons and daughters and manservants and maidservants and animals and strangers, why is a wife not included? Unless we assume that is the natural thing to include her, but why is she not in there? That's fair. Okay, one last verse on Shabbos, then we'll summarize. Yeah?
What's the answer?
What do you mean with the answer? You're second class citizen, that's the answer. Well, I think generally we assume that she is included within the husband. We'll look for an answer to that. It's a fair question. If you don't like my answer,
I just want to make sure we get one. Then I
can
think about it.
Okay, one last verse. Ki sheshes yamim asah Hashem es hashamayim v'yetzo oret. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, es hayom v'es kol asher bam, and the sea that all is in it. Vayonach bayom ha-shvi'i, and he rested on the seventh day. Al kain, therefore, beirach Hashem es yom ha-shabbos vayikadshei. The Lord blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. Comments, questions?
Does God need rest?
Okay, excellent. Question number one is a existential philosophical or theological question. What does it mean, Vayonach Bayom Ashvi? What does it mean that God rested on the seventh day? So we could say it in the way that he stopped creating, that makes sense, but the Torah puts it in a more active, positive way, like he rested. Which, if all that means is that he stopped creating, it'd be one thing, but the language is Vayonach, that he rested. That'd be a fair question. Like, what's with that language? What else do you have? There's a lot in this verse. What else do we have? Let me just throw some things out there just to get your mind thinking. Where else have we seen the phrase, or like in a quick succession, heaven, earth, and sea? On your sheets. Right, verse 4. Right, verse 4 said, you shall not make for yourself a graven image or in likeness which is in the heavens above, which is in the earth below, which is in the water beneath the earth. In the context of, you can't make any image of anything that's either in the heavens, in the earth, or in the sea. And here we have a language of, in 6 days, God made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. So those three are the symbolism, so to speak, of everything in the world. Heaven, earth, sea. And here we have them also. Okay, what are the comments in the verse? Excellent. So we say God created everything in 6 days, and therefore He blessed it and sanctified it. What do you mean He blessed it? It should get us thinking as to what does that mean, blessing? What does it mean that I bless an apple? When we use the word bracha, we mean that I make a blessing on the apple. Did I actually bless the apple? Common misconception, right? That, like, common media likes to always say, the rabbi blessed, the loaf of bread, or blessed the wells, or cursed the wells, or whatever they think over, Jewish history, they think that we do. But we're not blessing the apple. What are we're making a bracha, so to speak, to who are we blessing?
The the creator.
Right. We're blessing the creator of the apple. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, who created this apple. So what does it mean that God blessed the day?
He made it for good.
I don't know. I mean, the answer is yes, but what is it? Does that mean he blessed it? What does it mean that God blessed the day? What else do we see? What's the other word that the Torah uses?
Sanctified.
And sanctified it. Now that, I think, would be easier for us to understand that he sanctified it, because we borrow, he made it a holier day. So we have, you know, therefore we treat the day differently because it's of its sanctity, and therefore we have these prohibitions of doing work and other things. But those would be the two concepts we'll have to understand. The Torah here in verse 11 is giving us a reason why we have the concept of keeping Shabbos. Does the Torah list here the punishment for violation of Shabbos? Is that here in the Aseret HaDibros? No, it's not here. The Torah is going to say many times elsewhere throughout the Torah, Mechalaleha mos yumas, he who violates the Shabbos will surely be put to death. Putting it on that pedestal of the highest possible violations. Here in the Aseret HaDibros, in the Ten Commandments itself, doesn't say. So you say, well, the Torah doesn't give us punishments for anything in the Aseret HaDibros. Well, is that true? Right. Where have we seen something? Right. In the third of the Aseret HaDibros, so not taking God's name in vain, there we at least have a language of Kilo Yinakeh. He will not hold blameless. He will not cleanse anyone who takes his name in vain. And here we have Shabbos. Okay, let's summarize again. So what do we have within Shabbos? So it's a total of four verses, the paragraph that discusses Shabbos. How many mitzvahs would you say are here if you had to break up mitzvahs? How many mitzvahs are in these four verses? Remember, I'm looking for do's or don'ts. Where does the Torah use the language of you must or you must not?
Well, remember the Sabbath day.
Okay, so we have one comment of remember. Now, we haven't yet defined what that means, but whatever it means, the Torah is instructing us to do something. It's instructing us to remember the Shabbos day to sanctify it. That's one.
Or isn't sanctify a second?
Possible. The language doesn't demand it. It could be that in remembering it, you will be sanctifying it. So that's most likely not.
Then verse 10, you shall perform no labor.
Okay, then we have the prohibition. Sorry, verse 9 doesn't... I don't know what to do with verse 9. What should we do with verse 9?
It's working a commandment.
Right? I think it's what do we do with this verse? Remember Shabbos day. 6 days a week, you should work. Okay, and if you didn't tell me this verse... And you only told me...
Your translation is 6 days you should work. What's written here is 6 days you may work.
Okay.
To me, there's a difference.
There is a difference. Yeah. So we have this verse, 6 days you may work. And if we didn't have this verse, I wouldn't have thought that.
That's why I don't think it's a commandment.
Okay, it doesn't seem like it's a commandment. But it's certainly, we have the Torah feels the need to give us permission to work for 6 days. All the activities that you want to do, you can. And then in verse 10, we have an actual prohibition. But that the seventh day is Sabbath, you shall perform no labor. Lo sa'asechol melacha. Now we have again, do's, don'ts. We have a do, remember Shabbos to sanctify it. And we have a don't do any activity on Shabbos. And then we have a list of the people who can't, which I wouldn't classify as a separate commandment. That's just defining this commandment. Son, daughter, manservant, maidservant, animal, stranger in your midst. And then we have in verse 11, how would we define verse 11? Like, what category verse is it?
It's just explanatory.
It's an explanatory verse, sounds like, of why we have the concept of Shabbos. Because in 6 days, Hashem made heaven, earth, and the sea, and therefore we have an explanation. He rested on the seventh day, whatever that means, we haven't really defined yet. And therefore, Al-Kain, he blessed and sanctified it. And the fact that he blessed and sanctified it, whatever that means, nets the result that we have two commandments, to remember it and to refrain from doing any type of labor. So far, so good? So this is the fourth of the Aseret HaDibros Shabbos, and we would count two mitzvahs in it.
says that God sanctified it, and the first sentence says we should sanctify it. Is that the same thing?
Excellent. Very good question. In other words, what is, at the end of verse 11, we would see that the day is intrinsically blessed and sanctified. That's what God himself did. God himself blessed it, and he sanctified it. Yet, we are commanded in verse 8 to remember it, to sanctify it. So that we would have this, that's an excellent point, this interesting day in which it sounds like it's intrinsically already sanctified. It is, because God did it himself. And yet we are commanded to sanctify it. So what then did he do? And what is it that we're doing that they are both necessary? Wonderful point. So far, so good? Let's move forward. Yeah?
Yes.
Now I move to number 5, the fifth of the Aseret HaDibros. There's a little paragraph break. Kabed es avicha ves imecha, honor your father and your mother, l'ma'an ya'arichu n'yamecha al ho'adama, asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach. Honor your father and your mother in order that your days be lengthened on the land that your Lord, your God, is giving you. Okay, interesting verse. Comments?
A very important one for parents of teenagers.
Yes.
Baruch Hashem, I lived through it.
Why does he refer to the land?
Excellent. Okay, beautiful. Is this mitzvah, this commandment of honoring one's father and one mother, is that a land-based mitzvah or a non, when I say land, I mean, is that an Israel, land of Israel-based mitzvah or a non-land of Israel-based mitzvah? There are many mitzvahs. The way the Mishnah in the oral law defines it as mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz. There are certain mitzvahs which are contingent upon the land. Shemitah, for example, we were discussing a little bit earlier. Shemitah is a Israel-based land. Truma, taking off tithes, is an Israel-based land. And there are series, many, many, many mitzvahs which are land-based. Is honoring one's mother or father land-based or non-land-based? Is it like Shabbos? Is it like Tefillin? Is it like Tzitzis? Is it like Kashrus? Or is it like Shemitah and Truma, which are land-based? So obviously the answer is, it's not land-based. Nothing to do with the land. Which makes it a very interesting thing. Let's rephrase the question even stronger. This is the fifth so far of 10. Were commandments numbers 1, 2, 3, or 4, was there any reference there to in the land that I have given you? We haven't seen that phrase yet. Why have we not seen that phrase yet? Because it's irrelevant. That's exactly right. Because so far we've seen, I'm the Lord your God. We've seen you may not have any other gods. Worship, serve them, bow down to them. That doesn't, I don't care where you are. We've seen, don't take my name in vain. I don't care where you are. We've seen Shabbos. I don't care where you are. Honor your mother and father in order to lengthen your days on the land that I have given you. Or I will give you. Okay, excellent point. What else do we see interesting in this verse?
Gives you a reward for doing that.
Excellent. Okay, have we seen anything like that before either? Why do we keep Shabbos?
Don't.
For its own sake.
Right, what was the language, what was the verse's language? Why do we keep Shabbos? Because God made heaven and earth and the sea in 6 days, rested on the seventh, and therefore he blessed it and sanctified it. Again, we don't have words yet to describe what it means that he blessed it and sanctified it, but whatever it means, because he created for 6 days and rested, blessed and sanctified, therefore we have mitzvah Shabbos. Now we have another therefore in the form of an in order. It's a little different, not a therefore. And here's a very interesting one. Now we have the mitzvah of honor your mother and father. Why? And I'm not telling you why. Why would you suggest? If you have to give a reason for why should you honor your mother and your father? Yeah, your mother and your father. That's why. They brought you into this world. That's why.
Because I told you.
Right? And even if you want, if I had nothing less than that, at least I have that because I told you. So the Torah doesn't give us a reason why. It doesn't say why. It does something else, which is strange. It tells us what you'll get by doing it. So some mitzvahs, let's go back over the whole thing. I am the Lord your God. is there a reason or what you gain, either one of them? Let's classify those two possibilities. I could either give you a reason why you need to do this, or what you'll gain by doing it. Right? I am Hashem, the Lord your God. Is there a reason why? What's the additional element that's given? I took you out of. There's something there, which we said is interesting. I would have said I created everything. But there's a something there, some form of explanatory additional, whether or not it's a reason to do or benefit. I took you out of Egypt. Don't worship other gods. Is there a reason or something else offered?
Yeah.
I'm zealous. You better believe not to do this, because I'm a zealous God who extracts punishment for four generations of those who hate me, and I'll give reward to thousands of generations. Do we have something there? Then we get to taking my name in vain. And what's said over there? I will not hold blameless he who takes my name. There is something added there. Then we get to Shabbos. Is it reward or punishment there? It's not reward or punishment. It's really the reason. In other words, those are our two classifications. You have either reward punishment or you have a reason. Like the first one is a reason. I took you out of Egypt. Idolatry is reward punishment. I'm a zealous God. Take my name in vain, reward punishment. I won't hold you blameless. Shabbos, we don't have reward punishment. It's a reason, because 6 days I worked and created, and therefore I sanctified it. Now we go back to honor your mother and father, and we don't give a reason. We go back to reward punishment, and this is the first one where it's not punishment, but it's reward. What's the reward for honoring your mother and your father? Your days and life. So very interesting. As we go through this, we have three possible elements added to each commandment in the sense of reward, punishment, or a reason. So it's interesting to go through why each one is there. So here we have for honoring your mother and father, which, you know, I would have gone with a reason, you know, because they're your mother and your father, but we go with, for the first time, the reward. I will lengthen your days on the earth in which you live. Yeah.
What does it mean, like, to honor? How do you do that?
Okay, great. That's the other big question. Like, what would it look like to honor your mother and your father?
Right.
Excellent.
Because sometimes, you know, people who feel honored them and they did not live long lives, and other people, you know, who did, and they live very, you know.
Okay, so you're asking two questions.
Yes.
Yeah, two questions. Question number one is, which is a question, of course, the Gemara is going to deal with, and we'll see in Rashi, what does this mitzvah mean? What does it look like to honor one's mother and one's father? As all mitzvahs, there are always clear parameters as to what you can and can't do to fulfill the mitzvah. What does it mean to honor? Question number two you're asking is, if I see, now that the Torah says it, listen, if the Torah wouldn't promise me anything in this world, it would only promise me in the next world, everything is great. But if you tell me that by fulfilling this particular mitzvah, I will have length of days on the land that you are giving me, you're not talking about reward in the next world, you're talking about in order to lengthen your days on the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Well, you put it down there, not me, God, you put it there. How do you explain that? Fair question. Yeah. I don't know why you think I have any answers. I really, at this point, it's like been so long already. You keep coming back. You only keep coming back. That's why I think if I ever gave you an answer, you'd stop coming.
No, I promised I would come. You can do that. Honor your father and your mother.
Okay.
Question, are those two separate mitzvahs?
Excellent. Is there a difference between a mother and a father? Does honor look the same to both? All the excellent questions in terms of does one honor one's mother different than one's father? All right, so very interesting. Here, a specific reason given. In order to lengthen your days in the land that Hashem, your God, is giving you. And I'm assuming the reason why that's in the present tense, is giving you, is because they actually have not yet been given the land of Israel at this point. They're still in the desert, only 7 weeks out of Egypt. But in order to lengthen their days, and so what we started with is, certainly this wouldn't seem to matter, or let's say we don't live in the land anymore. So if God just means to say, in order that I'll give you length of days, so let him just say, I'll lengthen your days in this world. Why does he attach it to the land? Why is it that? That was the original question we asked.
Doesn't mean that you can only be respectful in Israel.
Right, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so.
Thank you. See, that's nice.
I didn't say definitively, I just said I wouldn't think so.
Close enough. I'll take what I could get.
Okay. Now, that was number 5, and let's just point out, which I'm sure many of you have heard already, but it's worth noting. What is unique about number 5 as opposed to numbers 1 through 4? Correct. Right. The first 4 are all man God type of mitzvahs. I am Hashem, your God. You will believe in me, or I am is a statement. However, we'll discuss that. But I'm God. Don't have any other gods. Don't take my name in vain. Keep Shabbos. All of those are things which can be done a Jew at a deserted island all by himself, because it's between him and his God. And number 5 is the first time that we've now switched into a new modality in which it's not just me on a deserted island. I cannot fulfill this mitzvah on a deserted island. I have to honor my parents. I have to be involved in interpersonal relationships, here specifically with my parents, in bestowing upon them honors. This is the first one like that we have seen. So when we point out all the new things about this one of the Ten Commandments, A, that it's the first time where there's a positive mitzvah, a positive reward that's given. We've seen reasons given, we've seen punishment that's given. This is the first one that actually presents itself with a reward. It's also the first of the Aseret HaDibros that presents itself with a relationship between man and his fellow man. Whether or not there's a connection between that, I don't know. But I'm just pointing it out. Okay, now we have a paragraph break, and now we run into verse 13. Verse 13 has 4 statements in it. Lo tirtach, you shall not murder. And then you'll see on the Hebrew side there's a little samach there. That little samach represents that there is that 9-letter space, which is a blank space in the language. So after the word, it's all in one pasuk, but within that one verse, there are paragraph breaks within the verse. You shall not murder. Lo tirtach, don't murder. Lo tinaf, shall not commit adultery. Lo tignov, you shall not steal. Lo sa nevereyacho et shoker, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. So one verse, 4 different prohibitions. Comments on these prohibitions. I'll get you started. Again, if we were to go through all 613 and cull out, I don't know, 30, to choose from those 30 the top 10, how many of these would you say would be there? Would you have more, others? Let's just rate them. Do you feel these are good choices for the top 5 interpersonal relationships between man? We have don't murder. How do you feel about that one? That's a pretty good one. I'm all in favor of that one. I mean, again, this entire discussion is God is right. We're trying to figure out if we would have done it this way, and if not, why are we wrong? I don't mean to present that in a way that like we're evaluating him. So don't murder. That makes a lot of sense to us. I understand why that one's on that. Adultery.
Yeah.
Okay, fairly significant as far as family life goes and the maintaining the value of family life. And as you can see from society around us, if you don't have that, so the ramifications more than just the adulterous act seem to be far more wide-reaching than just the act itself. But if you want to maintain the purity, sanctity of society, okay, so we have don't murder, we have don't commit adultery, don't steal. Is he about that? Right, so definitely make it to our top 30. If you don't have a society in which stealing is not a value of primary value, so then boundaries between what's mine and what's yours and who has rights, that would be a corruption of that. So certainly, it's no problems with that. In terms of do not steal. Next, we have what? Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. Yeah, why?
No.
Right? It doesn't seem like the other three. The other three are pillars of
direct.
Society.
They're more direct.
Much more direct. Murder, adultery is the home life, stealing and property. I don't mean to downplay lying in court about your friend. I'm not taking it out of the 613. I'm only saying, is it in the top 5 interpersonal mitzvahs between man and fellow man that if I only have to choose 5 or 6, let's include honoring your mother and your father, if I had 6 out of all the interpersonal relationships, would that be in my top 6? Yeah. I don't know. Yes? No, it's interesting. Yeah, I'm just putting it as a point of interest. Yeah, why?
Because it's Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is such a big...
Not Lashon Hara.
If you be a fault... Lashon Hara could be truth also, but he says they're false witness. You're talking, you know, against them. You know, if you want to get along with somebody, you can't do that. Either, you know, put up a shut up. You know, either you're saying the truth or don't start... You know, saying
so I'm not here to argue with you because I'm not taking it out of 613. I don't want to say that it shouldn't be a prohibition in the Torah. It should be. It is there, and that's all great. The discussion is this the sixth of the six most important, or what does it represent? And I'm okay with it being there also. And the Torah puts it there that it should be. I think the gut reaction is the one that Joyce had of. Gosh, it just doesn't sound like the same level of importance as murder, adultery, stealing. Those feel like a curb appeal. The curb appeal of those first three are, yeah. In other words, if you were to speak to your average run-of-the-mill, non-Jew, nice guy, and said, let's talk about the Ten Commandments. I'm setting up a society. Here are my big three. Murder, adultery, stealing, I think the curb appeal would be like, yeah, those are real important. That's what you got to start with. If I would add in the fourth law, I only have six laws in my entire society. That's all I'm going to have. So if you said those first three and you said and you only have six, those are. And then I said, and you can't lie in court about your friend. There's nothing else before that.
It seems like should go down to number 14. You know
okay.
What I mean?
Yeah, like it should be there. It's important. It just doesn't. It doesn't seem as inclusive. But that's fine. Our job is to understand that actually it is. I'm just setting it up that I think I'm the curb appeal. I don't need to convince you or anyone that the first three, murder, adultery, stealing, are the bedrock of society. We'll have a little bit more of a task to do that for lying under oath. Even though I think it's fair, you think about it, like, yeah, I mean, it would be a pretty corrupted society if you could do that.
Does it have to, you know, be under oath and you say in court, but this is just false witness. If I, you know, say to Dina, oh, you know, I heard, you know, such and such, which is a, you know, lie, so that's between people. And that's very destructive.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing. Again, I'm not here to disagree that it's destructive and damaging. I just want to put it on its place, which the Torah does, of how damaging. In other words, there are many interpersonal laws, like, for example, in this past week's parasha, we have the interpretation of lo tonu isha sachiv. You may not speak disparagingly about somebody else. You can't say hurtful things to them. I mean, can you imagine a society where people would walk around? That also would be bad. But it didn't make its way into the Aseres HaDibros. It's just one of the interpersonal mitzvahs in the Torah, like there are many. You may not take interest. That's also an important interpersonal law.
But does this mean in court? Because it says
that's the simple.
But it doesn't really feel like court.
That, well, an A to be a witness would imply that. Otherwise, you're not a witness. Yeah.
To me, it is in court. Isn't even though maybe they don't say it out loud, but do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be sort of including this? If somebody is.
Not if they didn't have to swear. I don't know if they'd have to swear in court. You know, you're saying they could be if they did. Yeah, this would be, even if there are certain circumstances where you wouldn't have to actually swear, this would then include those cases. Okay, let's do one more, because let's do the last one, because we have a lot, then we'll start talking about these. The last verse has a paragraph break in the middle of it, which I've included. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. Lo sachmod beis re'acha. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Lo sachmod eishes re'acha. Va'avdo v'amaso v'sharo v'chamoro v'chol asher l're'acha. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, his manservant, his maidservant, his ox, his donkey, or whatever belongs to your neighbor. Now this is, again, it's something we're all familiar with, that the tenth of the Aseres HaDibros is not to covet, but this is an interesting way of describing it.
Be jealous of? What is the...
Let's be desirous of. Okay. Wanting for yourself. We'll have to define that as well. That's an interesting... In other words, the English word is covet. We'll have to see the Hebrew sachmod, what is actually included within that. But what do we see, interestingly, about the way this tenth of the Aseret HaDibros is described.
Why list those things? I didn't say everything.
Excellent. So first we have, what are the things that are listed?
House.
Wife.
Servant.
Maidservant. Manservant. Then ox, donkey, whatever belongs to him. So you have possessions in the form of house. You have his wife. Then you have his possessions in the form of his actual servants, manservants and maidservant. Then his animals, his ox, his donkey. And then we have the inclusive phrase of, and whatever belongs to his neighbor. Why is there a paragraph break between his house and everything else? Just from a structural perspective, very strange. All right, we're out of time. We'll have a lot to talk about this one. What's unique about this? What's unique about this also, by the way? Let's just leave that in this.
Well, it doesn't mention the God or the Lord your God.
Okay, there's know your Lord your God. Is there a reason or punishment for the last five? The murder, adultery, steal, false witness, coveting, other things? No reasons, no reward, no punishment. None of those three things which appear in all of the first five. All of the first five have some additional information beyond just the actual prohibition in the form of a reason or reward or punishment. All five of them have something. The back five, none of them have anything. There's also something unique about the last of the five from the other ones, is that is there any action involved in this last five, this fifth one?
Okay.
Yeah. Doesn't sound that way. The back fives have murder, adultery, stealing, testifying falsely. This one doesn't seem to have an action. Just can't want it, desire it. Okay, we have lots to talk about, but that at least covers the structure and the text of the Aseret HaDibros. Okay, we'll continue in Hashem.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.